Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Rich Rowley, Nick Ashew, overtime on the Fan. 10-10, Miami and Ole Miss. Now we're starting to get that scoring, Britt.
Yeah, here we go.
Get closer to that over.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a shootout here, hopefully. That's what people were saying, though. You know, you can't ever predict that. Do you care who wins this game?
I don't care. It's one of those things. There's obviously no emotional connection for me between Miami and Ole Miss, so it's hope for a good game. That's it.
Agreed.
Really all I really care about. You know?
I agree.
Yeah, and a lot of scoring. Don't give me defense. Just give me lots of scoring.
Yeah.
I'll take the over on that.
Yeah, you know, and I like your chances with Ole Miss in that offense.
We're getting there. We're definitely getting there. All right, David Aldridge is one of the greatest authorities when it comes to the NBA. Senior columnist for The Athletic jumps on with us now. And listen, in D.C., obviously, Trae Young to the Wizards has been the big story over the last 24 hours here. A lot of mixed opinions, a lot of questions about whether this is a short term, whether this is a long term. What's just your take on the Trae Young situation now with that trade to the Wizards, David?
Well, I was a little surprised because I thought the draft compensation that each side won might have made the deal problematic, but they got it done with no draft compensation going either way. And so now the reality is I don't think Trae's going to play very much for Washington the rest of the season. He does have a sprained knee. He does have a quad contusion. And frankly, it's in the Wizards' best interest for him not to play and help them win games because they got to keep their pick. And so the calculus is they have to finish with one of the bottom eight records to keep their first round pick. It's a loaded draft next year. They really want to get one of these young players that are coming out. And even though they've been playing better of late, if Trae doesn't play and they've just traded C.J. McCollum as their best player, the chances of them winning a lot going forward, you know, diminish greatly. And so I think it's more of a play for next season. And it's a reasonable gamble, which is what I wrote today. But I don't have a sense that this may be a long-term thing. I think it's more, let's put a really talented offensive player at the position we really need help in, which is point guard, and see how good our young guys can be. Can they really raise their games offensively? Because that's where the Wizards have struggled. Well, they've struggled everything. What am I saying? But they really struggled. They've really struggled to kind of find an offensive identity outside of CJ having great offensive games. And now they want to see if some of their other young guys can really get to the next level. And first, I think they want to try to start winning more next year. They've been rebuilding now for 3 years, and that's about as long as anybody, fan base, ownership, league, is going to tolerate before they start demanding a team start winning, and the Wizards are there.
Okay, D.A., I'm glad that you – so it seems like Nick and I were kind of arguing about this earlier, debating. He thinks that – this is a terrible idea, and I'm surprised he didn't go right at you with it because he hates this trade.
I do hate it.
And I have said moral, and you know, I'm not an NBA insider, nowhere near your level at all, DA, but I've said just from a sports perspective, sometimes getting that star, that veteran, a guy like this who gets, you know, double teamed a lot, could help these young players along a little bit to some extent. Is there truth to that? Because this has been like a bottom half offense, and could getting that star help get them over the hump? Or, you know, Nick thinks this is something that they're just going to dump him next year and it's going to be more of a short-term thing.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
I feel like, I don't want to say it's a publicity thing, but I feel like it also kind of puts them on the map a little bit. Getting a guy with this kind of talent and this kind of star power that they haven't had in quite some time.
I think all of those things could be true, Britt. You know, I'm not naive enough to think that there isn't an element of Trae Young's an exciting player and we need a little help selling tickets. I don't think that was the main motivation or even the secondary motivation, but I don't think there's no motivation there, right? So, but I do believe, and I think they believe, that Trae Young's gravity as a basketball player over the years has created all manner of offensive shots for his teammates. Look at when he was first came to Atlanta, the first iteration of that team, they were a top five team offensively because he really does create pressure points that make it very difficult for that team to be guarded. He is the best lob passer in the league, period. End of sentence. There's no comparison. He throws a lob pass better than anybody else. Clint Capella lived off of Trae Young lobs and rim runs when he was in Atlanta in his prime. And I think they are thinking that that can happen with Alex Saar, who has really, at the defensive end especially, really taken a huge jump this year. He is leading the league in block shots. He has become much more intentional about scoring in the paint and going at the front of the rim. But he's not a guy that you throw the ball to and he throws a, you know, drop step on somebody or he posts up where he's not really good at that. What he is good at is moving. And with Trae Young, he can get him passes and shots on the move that could really help him. Trey Johnson, we know, is a knockdown shooter, their first round pick this year. Well, Trae Young's going to create a lot of open shots for Trey Johnson. Defense, you have to guard Trae Young. He's not, the ironic thing is he's not really a great 3-point shooter. He's okay, but he's not Steph Curry, not close to Steph Curry in terms of, you know, percentages. He shoots about 34, 35, which is okay, but not great in the NBA. It's not great. What he does is he gets to a slow game, runners, little baseline shots. He does a lot of his damage in the paint, and that creates opportunities for other players on his team to get open shots. And I think that's what the Wizards are looking to see. I think next year they would like to try to contend to get into the play-in conversation. And they will take and I think it's a one-year gamble. To me, it's not a big deal. If it works, if he plays great, okay, well, then you re-sign him to it. I don't think it's going to be a five-year extension or anything like that. And if it doesn't work, you say goodbye, you cut him, you let him walk, or you trade him at the deadline next year and you go right back to having $80 million in cap room in the summer of 27. So that, to me, this is a very low risk move for the Wizards. It's unusual. I think it's odd because he doesn't fit their profile, but he is a talented guy and fairness dictates that we see how it works before we pass judgment on it.
Talking to David Aldridge here on Overtime. You mentioned Trae Johnson, and Alex Saar is another one. I mean, obviously, this is Trae Johnson's first year, but Alex Saar, the growth from year one to year two for this team has been, you know, I mean, the time he spent with Team France and just the confidence and the physicality and the maturity that you see with him from year over year, so much better defensively. When I look at this young core that they've put together, I think this front office has done a really good job for the Wizards with identifying this young talent and really giving themselves an opportunity to sort of say, these are going to be the guys that we've now looked at and they're going to be our future. When you look at this young core the Wizards has right now, what do you see in terms of just the growth already and really their potential? Because you said something I thought that really stood out, like potentially trying to get to be at least like a play-in team next year. I mean, they're young, but they got a lot of young talent.
The question is, how good can they be and can they be really good together? And I think that's where you don't have those answers yet. There's some signs. The thing that's encouraging to me is that this is the first time, this little streak that they've been on throughout basically December, where they beat Milwaukee twice, they beat Memphis twice, they beat Atlanta, they beat Orlando the other night. It's the first time that we've seen, you know, multiple of their young guys playing well at the same time. What we've seen before then is that every once in a while, like Alex Saar had a great month last year, he just started making threes all of a sudden, and then that went away. And then, you know, Bub would have a couple of good games, and then that would go away. But you have seen Sarr and Johnson, Keyshawn George before he got hurt, and he'll be back tomorrow night. They were all starting to play well together. And that's what you want to see, right? With a young team, is can they kind of figure out how to play well together? Carrington's shooting 42% on threes this year, just monster improvement from last year. So the next step is, can they become more kind of connected, both offensively and defensively, where the action of one player leads to somebody else getting an open shot? And that's what they have struggled with. Even this season, because it's been a lot of playing off of CJ McCollum, and CJ would get on a heater and then other people would get open. And but they didn't really create for each other. And that's the next step. And I think that's what they are kind of hoping, if they start to play better with Trae Young, that they will, that their whole game will lift up, you know, and be better. Now, the question is defense, because Trae Young's a very, very bad defensive player. He's not good at all. And so can they get to the point defensively where they're just middle of the pack instead of last, you know, in the league? And that's where the challenge is going to be, because he can't help them with that.
Talking to David Aldridge, columnist with The Athletic. Hall of Famer as well. I feel like we need to mention that every time we talk to you, DA, because it is so impressive. If I were you, I would just drop it at the grocery store. Everywhere I went, I would just be like, David Aldridge, Hall of Famer. Probably why I am not a Hall of Famer. David, I want to switch topics with you real quick, DA, because you do such a great job keeping track of all of the DC sports. I know you're plugged in with the Commanders as well. We've been talking all day about Mike McDaniel losing his job in Miami, potentially coming here as an offensive coordinator. Nick's been cheering for this all night. In your mind, is this the top guy here for the Commanders? And do you feel like that would be enough of an impact to really kind of turn this offense back around and go back to what they want to do, which is run more, get back to the Shanahan style of things? How do you view McDaniel?
I mean, I think, look, yes, he's the guy. This isn't close. It's not. All due respect, Brian Daboll's a really good offensive coordinator. He did a really good job in Buffalo. I think he'd do a good job here, but I think it just makes so much sense. Mike McDaniel is a brilliant offensive mind. He was a direct descendant of Shanahan's. He worked with Dan Quinn in Atlanta. It just checks every box. They are actual friends, not work friends. They're, you know, Mike McDaniel has said that Dan Quinn is one of the guys that helped save his life because he was drinking too much. And this is real stuff, you know, and if you're going to replace Cliff Kingsbury, who's a really smart offensive guy, and you want to get to a Shanahan system, there is nobody that's better than Mike McDaniel to do it. I think it would be an incredible partnership. I think they would work great together. If you look at the Miami offenses when they were at their best a few years ago, yes, they went over the top a lot to Tariq Hill, but they ran the ball a lot. You know, they were, I think somebody said this, they led the league in passing yards and they were sixth in rushing yards. So, I mean, it was an explosive offense, best of both worlds. So I agree with Nick. I think he's the guy. I don't know why he hasn't been already. I know they have to interview other people and try to be deliberate with this, but you know, and look, he has to wait too, because there may be some playoff teams that fire their coaches after this weekend. That could happen. Right. That could happen. And so he has to wait and see if there's more openings that make sense, potentially for him as a head coach. And I get that. I doubt this will be done within 48 hours. That's more of a joke on my behalf, but I really do think he's the guy that could really take that offense to a completely different place than it's been. And not better than last year, because they were really good last year. Don't get me wrong. They were excellent. They were outstanding last year. But I think they could get to a better, different place with Mike McDaniel working with Jaden Daniels.
Honestly, I'm just hoping if we keep saying it, we can speak it into existence. Maybe not 48 hours, but like just put it out there. We're going to manifest this, and then we can have that offense where they actually do run the football a little bit more with some of the weapons they have. The great David Aldridge. Really appreciate you coming on with us. Thanks.
Thanks, D.A. Well,
I appreciate it. Britt, when are they going to trade Gore? Come on, let's get this done.
That was the question of the show we were talking
about.
Yeah,
I've been getting asked about that a bunch, D.A. I mean, honestly, given what starting pitchers are getting right now, they really should. They're going to have to thread the needle because Gore isn't as good as some of the other ones who have gotten traded, and he had a little injury concerns. But I think given what the Marlins got for Everett Cabrera and what the Orioles gave up for Shane Baz, this is the winter to trade. I'm glad we got 30 seconds of baseball talking. It's 3.5 hour show, D.A., that I'm on.
I saw the haul. That is amazing what they got.
It is.
That's what I was like, come on, Washington, pull the trigger already. Let's
I know. I know. And you wonder in Toboney in his first winter if he's, you know, looking at this and wondering, like, can we get Mackenzie Gore a little bit better and trade him in July? Or can we get this kind of a haul? And I think right now their asking price is so high and teams are like, well, Mackenzie Gore, not quite as good as some of these other guys.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
We'll speak that into existence, too. How about that? Mike McDaniel and then Gore getting traded. There you go. All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks, T.A.
There he goes. David Aldridge, The Athletic. I just got a text from somebody during this, an NBA guy. And I can read the text, but I won't obviously say who it's from. Wolves considering sending Conley, Dillingham, and Naz Reid to Memphis. And I said, for Ja? And he said, yep. So Ja Morant. At least going to throw that out there. Ja Morant might be the next point guard on the move next. And it's funny because, you know, with Trae Young, the report was that Minnesota was also interested, that they weren't really interested. Ja Morant has been linked to the Timberwolves for a while. He needs a fresh start. We talk about fresh starts.
Right.
Ja Morant is a kid with so much talent but a lot of immaturity. He's had a lot of off-the-court things go on. A fresh start for him on a team like Minnesota that's structured, that's had a lot of success, got a lot of talent there. Oh, my gosh, him and Anthony Edwards. Oh, it would be so much fun to watch. For an NBA junkie like me, I would lose my mind if that were actually to happen. That's also that. Great for David Aldridge to come on with us. And yes, we're going to speak this into existence. It may not be 48 hours, but Mike McDaniel as the offensive coordinator just, it would be. And I think it is important for people to keep in mind, too, the personal connection with Dan Quinn and Mike McDaniel. Like, it's real life stuff that he really, his career and his life could have gone downhill early on with his, you know, he was out late and he was partying and it was, you know, too much. And he's very open about that. And I think it's great that he is. But Dan Quinn is somebody that really helped with that. And those personal connections, especially for somebody like Mike McDaniel, that, listen, you just get fired. You're down in Miami and it didn't work out. And like, there's a comfort level, I think, that could pop. And I'm not in his head. I don't know for, you know, but I assume there'd be a level of comfort there to be back in an organization you were in before with somebody like Dan Quinn that you have so much respect for.
Yeah, and I think obviously you look at this offense and you look at Jaden and you say, this is a good situation. I don't think you go reunite with Dan Quinn if he's in Cleveland. You know, I think it's a case where...
No.
Sorry, I feel like I've been bashing on Cleveland a couple times, but you know what?
Well, you're not bashing on the city, you're bashing on the organization.
Exactly.
There's
great city, and honestly, their baseball team, the picture of small market success.
I'll say it, Britt. The franchise is terrible.
Correct.
Okay, I'm willing to say it. It's fine.
But, you know, I do think that can be a tiebreaker of sorts if you are torn between, let's say, them and...
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
The Detroit Lions, who reportedly have interest in him as offensive coordinator as well. You know, you look at kind of these opportunities, and I still think that Jaden is a better, more enticing option than Jared Goff with where he's at in his career, even though, as we talked about, the Lions have some really good weapons offensively, maybe more weapons offensively than Washington, certainly. But I think when you have that kind of backing and you have a coach that is defensive-minded, that is going to let you run this offense and run the plays and do what you do best, which is make offensive players better, I think it's a great situation. To DA's point, now you got to wait around, and you almost have to hope, if you're the Commanders, I think, that no more jobs open up, because the more that open up, the more the better chance that McDaniel I keep wanting to add an S, which Danny it's did natural. Earlier. I know. Yeah. Danny did earlier as well.
Well, if you're using the plural at the end and it's, you know, there's like, an apostrophe in the
keep
S,
trying to
it's
make
different.
His name possessive.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, you have to hope that no more jobs open up because, you know, in the game of musical chairs, the more jobs that are open, the better chance it is that he takes one of those jobs and you are stuck with your second best option.
If he wants to be a head coach, though, and we don't know, but I wonder whether he looks at being a head coach versus offensive coordinator and says, maybe I've done it and that was enough and I know now what I really want to do and what I'm really passionate about.
Right.
He comes across to me as a guy where it would be based a lot on that, too, is like, this is what really makes me happy and I'm cool with it. You know, he's ripping vapes on the sideline anyway. I mean, it might as well. Have you seen those videos? You know what I'm talking about, right?
I have, yeah.
I'm just making sure.
And you're still making a lot of money. I think what people don't realize is, like, it's not like these offensive coordinators are making 50 grand. Like, these guys are making seven figures, too. It is definitely, you can make a living. You can make a good living doing what you're good at. You're right. Like, taking out all the noise. You don't have to talk to the media nearly as much. You're not on the podium. Like, you can stay in your lane. You can do what you do best. And you can still make a ton of money, and you could work with one of your really good friends.
The one issue, and somebody brought this up to me, and I do think it is a good point, is that coordinators don't make the Hall of Fame, which I totally forgot about. And like that kind of ruins a lot of careers for great coordinators that maybe wouldn't be head coaches. That should be recognized. That should matter. Like, Mike McDaniel just may not be a guy that's a CEO-type leader, and it's more of just... He's the coach that knows his offense and knows his specialty, and it just he knows his role. Like you said, it's a really good role, and it's a very lucrative role, and he's very, very good at it. But some people just aren't. Like, I feel like we've gotten to this point where the narrative of, like, that guy's not a head coach means that they're not a good coach.
Correct.
There is a difference between the two.
Yes. But in what sport does, like, a not the top coach or manager or whatever make the Hall of Fame?
So, right.
Like, in baseball, the hitting coaches aren't going to Hall. You're not going to Hall of Fame as a hitting coach.
But I think the difference in football is there's a lot more control as an offensive and defensive coordinator.
True.
Right? Like, an assistant coach in the NBA, though, they're stout. There are some teams are actually making guys like defensive coordinators.
Yeah.
But the coaching staffs in the NBA are huge now. And yeah, right. You've got, you know, a hitting coach or a pitching coach or, you know, first base coach, whatever. Like, there is a little bit less in terms of responsibility than an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, even a special teams coordinator to a point. So I do feel like you could look at it in some ways as you are the head coach of the offense. You're the head coach of the defense.
Right.
That elevates the responsibility and the, you know, importance probably of those. Not to say that a first base coach or a hitting coach isn't also important, but, like, let's be real. An offensive coordinator is massively important in today's NFL, and I think there's a stigma in some ways of, like, a guy can't make it as a head coach. Josh McDaniels, we can add the S there, has been the offensive coordinator now for the Patriots, it feels like, 162 times.
Correct.
But he's always had success. He's been a head coach twice, and he's been terrible twice. He's not a head coach, but he's a great offensive coordinator, which makes him a great football coach just on the offensive side of things.
But you could be appreciated by the game and not be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
There's so many semantics that go into Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but guys,
this is why there's
egos,
snubs and things,
you know,
like that.
We need to be recognized. We're really just have fragile egos. All guys, we're that way.
Yes, I agree. But I think, like, if you go and you're seen as, like, this offensive guru and stuff, and you're, like, well-liked and respected all around the league, and, like, I don't know. That, to me, means more to most of these guys than Hall of Fame stuff is how their peers think.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And if you ask Mike McDaniel, would you rather go to the Hall of Fame or win 3 Super Bowls as an offensive coordinator with Washington? Mm-hmm. I don't think it would be a hard decision.
I think you're right. And honestly, the first interview he has when as we speak it into existence, when he's named the offensive coordinator for the Commanders, somebody needs to ask him that question, whoever asked him that.
Because that's, he'll be like, wait, what? Yeah, this is day one. Why are we talking about Hall of Fame?
Here. Yeah. We're happy to have you
Who
here.
Who are you again?
All right, Bridger Rolly, Nick Ashew on Overtime on the Fan. Britt Giroli, Nick Ashew here on Overtime. Great stuff from David Aldridge. Now, as I look at this text again I was sent during that segment, I can't wait to see if Ja Morant gets traded to the Timberwolves.
They do, you can say you had it first.
I did. You know,
did you check Twitter? Are there rumblings?
No, this is a text from a personal source. I'm actually glad I've never had to, like, be a reporter and break news. That's got to be stressful.
It is stressful, It's only stressful at times where you know news is coming, like trade deadline.
Yeah.
Or like when we're at the winter meetings and you like think stuff should happen. Otherwise, baseball, the sport I cover, operates on such a weird, there's no deadlines.
Right.
So it's like, la-da-da, oh, I ran into this news today, let me tweet it. Right. You don't live in this like constant state of anxiety.
I guess that's
except for the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And then you live in a constant state of anxiety.
But even then, the trade deadline is then like not a trade deadline, and then there was that whole thing to deal with.
Yeah, but they kind of changed like the way the waivers works.
Yeah,
so it's a little bit more like that.
It's pretty
much like all
now.
The big trades happen then.
Right.
So that's like a little more stressful, but in today's world, if you're not first, and you're 30 seconds later, nobody knows but you.
If you ain't first, you're last.
Yeah, Ricky Bobby. Yeah. But in today's world,
You
know, I can play with sports media, sports movie lines.
I love it. Oh, we might have to do that the last half hour of the show here, just movie quotes the whole time.
That'd be a fun segment.
You know what? It's not so bad.
I would absolutely crush you in something like
that. Ooh, I kind of like this. We might have a challenge for the next
show. I mean, I have some like
do.
Underrated lines that you're going to be like, I didn't know that was a line. My husband says this all the time. Like, I didn't. That line could be from any movie. It's like, no, absolutely not.
I've gotten to the point in life, where like I will just insert movie quotes into a conversation. Like there's some people that they just get like song lyrics. For me, it's movie quotes.
Oh, for sure. That's how my sisters and I operate.
Or like
sports,
quotes from The
quotes.
Office or something like that too. Yeah. I'll definitely be that guy.
Like
too.
I'm going to Milan next month. As I told you, I'm covering the Winter Olympics. Mm-hmm. So one of the sports I'm covering is hockey. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things my sister said to me was, she's like, you better not play like it's some throwaway game up in Rochester. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys, neither you nor Wes have any idea what that's from. Do you?
No, do you know what it is? You're shaking your head either.
No.
Throwaway game up in Rochester. Yeah, you guys are playing
like it's some throwaway game up in Rochester. Where is this? The Olympics. Miracle.
Oh, jeez.
Where he's getting all upset.
When was this movie released?
What, Marathon? Oh, that's just kind of a... Okay,
Miracle's
remember,
like a classic.
This
I
is a,
he's
like
10.
A 19-year-old that we're talking to right now. So just keep in mind that, you know, he was in elementary school yesterday.
Yes.
So there's that. Oh, we do have real football this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk
this
that.
This is one of my favorite weekends of the year. I'm so excited, except for the first game. Rams-Panthers. Ugh, that is a historic... Like, it's... The Panthers are 10.5-point underdogs at home.
I know,
in this game.
Which tells you all you need to know about the Rams and the Panthers. Yes. However, the Rams have lost a lot of winnable games.
I know.
Therefore, they're not like the automatic check that you would think.
Mm,
we had this discussion. They're a well-rounded team, but they're not a great team, I feel like.
You know what's funny?
They're a balanced team.
There was a point for a while where I looked at the Rams and said, that's the best team in the NFC. But I don't feel that way now. Now, they've dealt with some injuries, and there's, you know, like you mentioned this stretch late in the season here for them. But, like, it's the talent is there, the coaching is there, the experience is there. But the NFC is still, like, the AFC, you kind of feel like it's the bottom where you're looking at more of the Bills that you have a level of confidence in, or, like, this is their year. In the NFC, you could make that argument for the Rams, the 49ers. I mean, I'd still say the Eagles because of the defending champs, but their offense is a disaster right now. Seattle's tough for me only because you have a coach that hasn't been a head coach in the playoffs, and Sam Darnold in the playoffs is a whole other conversation. So I'd almost put them aside. I'd put the Bears aside because first-year head coach, young quarterback, Caleb Williams never played in the playoffs. The NFC feels like there are more teams that you could at least feel confident in versus the near the top versus the AFC. I'm looking all the way down at the Bills going, dude, this is your year.
Their year.
Yes.
We talked about this earlier in the show. Like all the big bad boys are out. So if you're not going to put on your Superman cape and play like a big bad boy, then what's Josh Allen doing here? Not to place all the, like, it's not, I mean, there's been games where he has played his ass off and they should have won and they didn't. And, you know, there have been many a times, like as Kiefer said, Zach Kiefer at The Athletic talked to us earlier, where like they played Patrick Mahomes in the middle of a dynasty. Like, what are you going to do there? But I just feel like this has to be the Bills here.
The Bills defense, though, has got to stop giving up big runs.
Correct. You have to stop relying on Josh Allen to pull a miracle out.
Right. But, but just even on the other side of things. So it's interesting. There's this, if you look at this Bills-Jags matchup, the Bills have given up 28 runs of 15 yards or more on the ground. That's the most of any of the postseason teams. So they've given up big chunk yardage on the ground. But it's funny because the Jags are 27th in the NFL in rushes of 15 or more yards. So the Jags don't get that, but the Bills give that up. So, like, where does that aspect go? It's been a big weakness for the Bills, but it's been a big weakness for the Jags. I still like the Bills in this. I like the playoff experience, whether it's coaching, whether it's players, like, all down the board.
Right.
They have so much, and they are slight favorites in this game. I listen, I'm a big Trevor Lawrence fan. I have been waiting for like the growth of Trevor Lawrence, the blossoming of Trevor Lawrence, and we've seen moments of it. But you'd have to go back like 3 years,
yes,
late in the season, and then then there was a ton of turnovers in the playoffs. Did win a playoff game, but did lose, and we're going back to 2022 for that. Right now, though, this is the best we've seen Trevor Lawrence. Liam Cohen has gotten the best out of him and this team. The defense has been better for Jacksonville too. So it's not like the Bills are Jacksonville's playing some of the best football in the NFL, period. So it's not like Buffalo's just going to roll into this game.
Not by any means.
At all. So the road is still tough for them all the way through. I put weight on experience in the playoffs, but like talent also still matters, and Jacksonville does have that talent now.
Yeah, they absolutely do. I mean, yes, we're talking about the Bills and kind of not even talking about the fact that Jacksonville's the hottest team in the NFL, and they're the favorite team. They've got the home game. And personally rooting for the Bills and will root for the Bills. There's obviously a route, and a very easy route, where the Jaguars win. Do you see a route where the Rams lose?
No, not a chance.
You don't?
No, not a chance.
Really?
Barring injuries,
that seems to be the one that's like the most of all the wild card. That seems to be the one that's most like it has the biggest potential to be a blowout.
So
I think most of the other ones I think are going to be pretty close. That one looks like it could be a blowout.
I think first off, the Panthers have no business being in the playoffs. It's just like you have to pick somebody. They snuck in the back door, backed their way in.
That's how I feel about the Steelers. But
and they're going to get after Bryce Young and make him make so many mistakes. It's going to be I think it's going to be a slaughter. There's a reason why the NFL buried that as the early afternoon, afternoon game. Like, nobody wants to watch that slaughter. And then you've got a great game Saturday night with Packers Bears, which, I mean, a rivalry game. They hate each other. Like, all of that mixed in together. Like, there, most of these games, honestly, in fact, every single one of these games, I'm excited to watch, except Rams-Panthers. Rams-Panthers feels like it's a blowout now, and it's halftime. I can probably just, like, watch it casually as opposed to, like, intently at this point. Sorry, but Jacksonville. Carolina has just no business being in the playoffs here. Yeah. It was like, we got to pick somebody. Sure, we'll go with that at this point. Listen, I know miracles have happened, but this ain't going to be that miracle.
All right. Well, Wes back here doesn't even know Miracle's a movie.
No,
but anyway,
he doesn't even know what it is. He's too focused on it.
Now he knows. Yeah. Let's get to that Packers-Bears, because like that coaching rivalry to me is like one of the sillier ones, because the whole thing just basically started out of, feels like thin air, right? Like, the inflection point was basically one of them being like, I don't know who that is, right? Like, what?
So Bears-Packers in general, I mean, look, we know obviously that division and that, just that alone, it's a regional rivalry to a point, and it's a division rival, and there's a lot of history there. Then you have Aaron Rodgers talking about how he owned the Bears for so long. Then you have Matt LaFleur and Ben Johnson now, and they got a beef, and
it's the weirdest beef.
You know what? I'll take it. Give me some beef. Give me some drama. It makes these games so much more fun.
Are you surprised that the Packers are favored?
You know, I am
small.
I'm not surprised, only because of the fact that, again, it goes to Caleb Williams, his first start in the NFL, or in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Ben Johnson's a rookie coach. Matt LaFleur is not on the hot seat, but there is a lot of pressure on him. I go back like the same pressure that John Harbaugh had, let's say, like 3 or 4 years ago with the Ravens, where it's like, come on, man, we got to start making some progress here, because you've had so many successful regular seasons in Green Bay under Matt LaFleur, but then you get to the postseason, and there have been a lot of letdowns, and there's different things, different reasons. But this is now getting to the point where if they, after going 9-7 this year, I know they dealt with some injuries and Jordan, but if this gets to a point where they're one and done in the playoffs again, you're at least going to hear the whispers of Matt LaFleur next year. Is this his last year?
Yeah.
Are they going to move on? Who, by the way, would be a very hot head coaching candidate. And maybe Dan Quinn, they're done with him by then, and then Matt LaFleur comes back to Washington. And you got Mike McDaniel, Matt LaFleur. Ooh, I just spoke that into existence.
Wow.
Anybody else want to play this game with me? I'll do it.
Wow, this is incredible. Back to this game. I mean, the weather's going to always going to be a factor.
Yes.
Yeah. What I like about the Bears, though, is they don't turn the ball, like, as you mentioned, not a whole lot of experience there, but they do a great job of holding on to the football. They're one of the best teams at limiting, turnovers in NFL. So that might, I mean, the experience matters to some extent, but the fact that they are the higher seed and they are playing at home, I think helps a ton. I think if they were to march into Lambeau Field, right? Mm-hmm. With that no experience, and all of a sudden they fall behind a little bit, and the crowd, the whole state of Wisconsin's going nuts. Like, the cheeseheads are throwing stuff. Like, a totally different atmosphere, I think, than being at home where the crowd is going to be on your side.
Two things that do help Chicago in this, to kind of offset that lack of experience with some of the guys out there. One, their defense is, they thrive off turnovers.
Yeah.
If they can make, and Jordan Love, we know, can throw some picks. We've watched him turn the ball over before. If they can get after Jordan Love, if they can force the turnovers, that's going to be a major, major factor for them. And they have 6 wins after trailing in the final 2 minutes. That's the most any team has had since the merger in 1970.
Wow, that's
so
impressive.
Chicago has been awesome in close games, yeah. Awesome behind late. So there is a level of pressure, even in the regular season, when you're down, and Caleb Williams and that offense has brought them back. So that's something that can help with the lack of experience. They're still understanding. They've been in kind of, in some ways, playoff mode, you could argue, in a lot of these late-game situations. So it's not a situation where I'm just like, well, they've never been here, so they're not going to win.
Right.
Chicago's got talent. And yeah. Chicago certainly has the ability to win these close games, but they're really built on the takeaways in these close games. So
it's a one possession game.
It really could come down to that. So, and that's one of the things that they're really, really going to have to pay attention to. All right, we've absolutely crushed the clock here.
We haven't gotten into most of these games.
We're not done yet. We still got more show left. We still, you know, I don't even know. I don't even know how many segments we have left, to be honest with you. Wes is just looking. It's like, I don't care. I just want to be done with this. I just want to watch my stupid Texans play. Britt Chiarulli, Nick Ashley, overtime.
Whoa.
What are you? Whoa.